You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. How you doing this fine Thursday afternoon? Depending on where you are in the state, certainly hope that you are battening down those hatches, as they say. Good bit of weather coming through. We're going to keep you updated here as some of that inclement weather rolls through. Hail already coming down on Madison's west side. So if you're in the WMDX listening area, please be safe out there. Be aware. We're going to keep you posted. Columbia and Sauk counties now reporting a tornado warning. Again, folks, please be very aware of what's going on weather-wise in your area. Got a lot of activity across the state of Wisconsin. Welcome, welcome wherever you may be. Hope you're safe. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a couple of great guests today, a number of them. We're going to be joined by my colleague Greg Gunderson at the bottom of this hour for a little bit of what's going on in your neck of the woods. We got the Center for American Progress Fund, Jeremy Janine for Milwaukee as a microcosm joining us. We've also got Tiffany Shano that's going to join us at 5:30. She's the founder of Learn in My Shoes. We're going to talk about what parents have to do to make up for, frankly, some of the federal funding failures when it comes to student education. But right now, not only do we have some breaking weather news, which is pretty incredible, I think we've got Mace Michaels on the line. Hey, Mace, is that you? Let's get a little weather update, shall we? Hi.
Yes. Hello. Hi. A number of warnings here across the state. The line of storms extends from south of Madison, where there's been some inch and a half size hail now reported near the Fitchburg area, with severe thunderstorm warnings, including the city of Madison, to a tornado warning up closer to Baraboo. No tornado reported yet, but there's rotation south of Reedsburg. Additional warnings up along 94 through Mauston, up to Toma and Sparta, with severe thunderstorm warnings in those cities. And then warnings extend from there with a pretty intense hail near the Black River Falls area. A tornado warning includes Eau Claire right now, with some one-inch hail reported. And the line of storms from there extends all the way on up through Balsam Lake and Amory. Tornado warnings continue for eastern Polk County until 4:15. So this is a nasty little healthy line of storms that is already from eastern east central Minnesota through west central Wisconsin, again from Balsam Lake and Amory down to Madison, producing hail, producing some wind damage, and even several funnel clouds reported earlier on, too.
Wow, that is Mace Michaels of Severe Studios, a meteorologist with them. Mace, anyone need to take shelter right now? Anybody need to be on the lookout for that in our listening area that you're aware of?
Sure. If you're in the Madison area, you have to be watching out for the cell that's moving through from east of Fitchburg over towards Oregon and up through downtown Madison right now. That severe thunderstorm warning that is out for central Dane County continues until 4:30. Again, inch and a half size hail reported in Fitchburg. Also, Baraboo included along with the Dells in a tornado warning. So if you're in that area near Sauk City up through Baraboo, head to shelter. And then also up on the network in the Eau Claire area, a tornado warning in and around Eau Claire. There's been one-inch size hail reported, but then again, also the potential of rotation close to the city of Eau Claire. So those would be the areas I'd be most concerned with, and north of Amory, too. Don't want to leave that out. That cell actually has produced several tornadoes from earlier on.
All right, folks, you heard it from Mace Michaels, a Severe Studios meteorologist. Thanks so much. Do give us a call back, Mace, if there are further developments. Folks, if you're in Amory, the Eau Claire area, Madison area, please be safe out there. Keep your radios tuned in here to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll keep you up to date with all the breaking weather news. Mace, you take care out there too, my friend. Thank you.
Sure, we'll do. We'll keep you posted.
Thanks much. Folks, it was Mace Michaels of Severe Studios, a meteorologist. very appreciative of that news update. We also have some other breaking news at this hour. Apparently, Milwaukee police officers with shields and weapons drawn have rushed into the Zeidler Municipal Building. This is the building that is across the street from Milwaukee City Hall. It houses a number of city departments. I'm getting information from a number of my sources that apparently shots were fired somewhere in the waterworks floor of the municipal building. Again, this is the Zeidler Municipal Building. If you are on the Water Street area near Kilbourne, near that area, near Red Arrow Park, my suggestion, folks, is please stay away from that area of downtown. This is also right next to the BMO Tower that went up, that new, big, beautiful building downtown. Apparently, some of my police sources are telling me no one has been shot. The suspicion is that this may have been a possible fired employee of the water department. Nothing confirmed yet. That is the best that I've got from my sources. Again, we will keep you updated on that as the news breaks this afternoon. Again, folks, if you're just joining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Wanted to provide some other, maybe not breaking this instant news, but other news of the day. Just saw as I was getting ready to come on air with each and every one of you that the state of Florida is now the second state in the union to ban fluoride in drinking water. That is a topic for a whole nother day. I guess all I have to say about it is a groan. Really? In other news also, this was from yesterday. We didn't have time to get to it, but it is incredibly important to note for the broader discussion that we're going to engage in this afternoon. Yesterday, a federal judge in Virginia ordered the immediate release of Georgetown University fellow Dr. Badar Khan Suri from ICE detention. The court ordered that there be no conditions, no bond, no restrictions, no limitations, again, no conditions on the immediate release. The person was to be released immediately. The government provided no new information in court related to, in other words, the government provided no evidence in court to support their naked, bald allegation that this fellow from Georgetown University was somehow affiliated with Hamas. This is important. It cues up our discussion today. I wanted to begin, of course, with the discussion of Judge Hannah Dugan's indictment yesterday, which was followed immediately thereby by her legal team filing a motion to dismiss the entire criminal complaint and indictment outright. I'm going to get into some of the merits of that, but I wanted to share with you all these facts before we start delving into a bit of what Judge Dugan's lawyers argued in the motion to dismiss the indictment entirely yesterday. As many of you know, if you have been listening to the show for some time, I am the former corporation counsel for Milwaukee County. That's the fancy term for I was their chief legal officer. I handled all of these civil legal matters for Milwaukee County in that job for over 7 years. My office was in the county courthouse on the third floor down on one end. We had a suite of offices. I have been in almost every courtroom in the county courthouse, including the courtroom in which Judge Dugan presided until her, I'm going to call it, unconstitutional arrest a few weeks ago. The physical layout here is really, really important. And so when we get into some of these discussions, which I hope you'll engage with me, 855-752-4842, what the government is alleging, you have to gut check it with, well, does that even hold water when you know what the physical space looks like? And I'm here to tell you, it just doesn't. The door, to refresh your recollections, if you all don't remember, the core allegation that is the basis for these two criminal charges against Judge Dugan, which are basically obstructing and then hiding or concealing someone, concealing a person from arrest, that's under 18 U.S. Code 1071, and obstruction of proceedings. it really strains even the most sort of Trump-friendly interpretation of these statutes. This, both of those charges depend on this claim that Judge Dugan was committing a crime when she directed this man who is appearing in her court to exit her courtroom out of a side door and down a hallway. Now, I'll grant you that that might sound a wee bit nefarious on its face. But ladies and gentlemen, here's the deal. If you are standing outside Judge Dugan's courtroom, the main entrance to her courtroom, if you're standing right in front of it, the door that the defendant came out of is 6 feet to the right. That's the door that, literally, it's if you are standing in between the doors, you could almost shake hands with someone coming out of each set of doors, that close together. And I want to get into, in this first half hour of the show, the arguments that Judge Hannah Dugan's legal team has put forward in the motion to dismiss. And I rarely do this on the air, but on occasion, I will give myself some credit. And this, my friends, is one of those instances. And the reason I'm going to give myself a little bit of credit here is because, of course, the fact that on the day that Judge Dugan was indicted, I said to you that the indictment will fail, not indicted, that the criminal complaint was filed pending the indictment, which was delivered yesterday by a federal grand jury. I made two arguments to you about why this case will never result in a guilty verdict. And the first argument was that state court judges control their courtrooms absolutely. They are basically kings within their courtrooms. So who goes where, when, and why? All of that completely within a state court judge's purview, without exception, without investigating why they did things the way that they did. That's just what a state court judge gets to do. And the second argument I made to you that day, that Friday, Good Friday, a few weeks back, was that the 10th Amendment prohibits the federal government from pursuing these charges at all, because by extension, the 10th Amendment prohibits the federal government from mucking about in a state government's application and supervision of its own criminal codes and statutes. The 10th Amendment, recall, is the thing that says anything that's not explicitly listed in our Constitution as a federal power is a power reserved to the state. Well, ladies and gentlemen, my friends, would it surprise you that Hannah Dugan's motion to dismiss is based on two arguments? Ah, yes, that state court judges have absolute control over everything that goes on in their courtrooms, and they are immune from any prosecution or any interference with those decisions. And secondly, the 10th Amendment prohibits this prosecution. Apparently, I know as much as a former U.S. Solicitor General and a former U.S. Attorney. We're going to discuss that motion to dismiss when we come back. Join us, 855-752-4842. We'll keep you apprised on breaking weather news and the developments at the Zeidler Building. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got an update for everyone. We have confirmed reports of at least one tornado in the St. Croix area. One tornado in the St. Croix area. One of our meteorologists out there sending in some photos to Civic Media. I'm looking at the tornado. Those suckers are scary when you lay eyes on them, no doubt about it. Apparently all is beautiful in Manitowoc if you're in that area. But folks, again, we'll keep you updated on what is happening weather-wise across the state of Wisconsin. Keep those updates coming in. If you have an update from your neck of the woods, 855-752-4842. That's 855-CIVIC. I'm joined now by my colleague in broadcasting, Greg Gunderson. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show, Greg.
Hi, Maggie. Thank you so much for having me again. So glad to be back.
I'm exploring and talking a wee bit about the motion to dismiss that Judge Hannah Dugan's team filed yesterday to basically get rid of the case in its entirety against her. I am taking a wee bit of a, well, I told you so moment, which I rarely do on these things. The day that she was indicted, I made two arguments on this program. Firstly, I said, listen, state court judges have the absolute right to control their courtrooms and the comings and goings of persons into and out of their courtrooms unequivocally and without limitation. Secondly, I argued that the 10th Amendment, which states that any power not explicitly enumerated and granted to the federal government is reserved by the states. Therefore, it is the typical course, and it has been historically the case, that like 80% of all criminal prosecutions happen in state court. By extension of the 10th Amendment's core principle, then, the federal government cannot engage and enforce its laws in a way that interferes with the state's enforcement of its criminal proceedings. So not only does a state court judge enjoy total control of her courtroom, the feds are actually prohibited by the 10th Amendment from mucking about in said courtroom and said criminal proceedings. That would make it unconstitutional. And lo and behold, Gray, in the motion to dismiss filed by a team of the nation's top lawyers on behalf of Judge Hannah Dugan, what did they argue? Yep, those two very things. First, that the judge enjoys complete immunity for how she runs her courtroom. And secondly, that the 10th Amendment itself also prohibits this prosecution because it would implicitly endorse federal agents effectively co-opting the state court system to effectuate immigration arrests under federal law, not prohibited. Gray, I wanted to get your sense of what people are saying about this in your neck of the woods. I think on the surface, it would be very easy for someone to say, oh, she kept those federal officials from doing their job. Of course she's guilty. But once you stop and start to think about what it would mean for local law enforcement and for the safety of all of our communities, under which it is provided largely under state law by our local police and local courts, maybe people can start to see some nuance there. What are folks saying in your neck of the woods, Gray?
You use the word. You use the word that is the 10-foot pole. You said nuance, Maggie, and I'm afraid that is just not being applied. So basically, the general trend up here, and not to knock people, because there are certainly some free thinkers, and there are people with more complex paths to the same point than others are taking to get there. But by and large, the impression that I get from the outside looking in is that most people are looking for their litmus paper. Do I look? Mm-hmm. I check my touchstones. I check my three-letter news orgs. I check my social media where I follow these people directly, and I don't need to name anybody. You know exactly who they are, but I know exactly if I need to know how to feel, I know exactly where to check. They're right there. Those channels are well worn already, even with this light use they've seen. I'm continually impressed and horrified by the efficiency of the cult of personality that's in place, because it's those who I would have considered the most suspicious, the people who would have been right there in Madison the moment news that a judge was arrested broke. Nope. The DOJ is currently headed by people we don't question right now, so that a judge is being arrested and tried for something that, I mean, the weirdest part of it for me is that I'm seeing people talk about the content of the 10th Amendment as though it's some theoretical discussion that maybe someday might become a law. It's like, no, we're talking about the 10th Amendment. It exists. It's a noun. It's established. It's got rebar in the concrete that's buried in the earth. Like, this is an unshakable thing. Not unshakable. I get it. Amendments are not infallible, but we're talking about them up here as though it's not even in place.
Let me just ask you this follow-up question, Gray. Are people putting together that if federal agents can show up in state courthouses and start arresting people, interrupting state court criminal proceedings, that makes it far less likely that victims, witnesses, and defendants facing state-based criminal charges will show up in court, which will make it harder to keep your neighborhood safe, right? Like, if people start dodging state court prosecutions and witnesses and victims don't show up to testify, that's not good in a very immediate way for local safety and local law enforcement. People putting that together at all?
I'm afraid not. I you probably saw me deflate like a bad balloon the day after the party as you were going about that question, it's because the more I thought about it, just no, the signs that everything's okay anyway are in place. The alarm bells that I, the average person up here in this neck of the woods, the alarm bells that I'm looking for, they're not going off yet. And that's when Donald Trump worries, I'm worried. You know, that's just the general, there's just so much trust on behalf. That's what bewilders me. The most suspicious people I've ever met are taking things at face value that just, okay, I'm just going to go tear my hair out where you can't see.
Did they like QAnon back in the day? I mean, come on, man.
No, but we found the diet version of it or something. I don't know.
Listen, we got to take a breath. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Sarah Partridge from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Super excited to talk to her. We're going to be talking about education policy, which will bridge to our 5:30 guest today, also talking about how to make sure your kids get a top-notch education despite the cuts that the federal government may be engaging. Keep it locked. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. That's what we're going to have to do is take it to the street. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. A couple of severe weather updates before we bring on our next guest. We are getting reports from Madison and Sun Prairie that there is indeed pea-size hail. And in the Portage area, it is almost dark as night. Please be very, very careful out there. In Wisconsin Rapids, we've got a severe thunderstorm warning and tornado watches right now. We've been hearing sirens throughout the city in Wisconsin Rapids. Please, 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 everyone, keep tuned here. We'll keep bringing you the weather updates. Be safe out there. Rather safe than sorry. Folks, again, welcome back. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a fine guest from the Center for American Progress Action Fund joining us this afternoon. Her name is Sarah Partridge. She's the Associate Director of Higher Education Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Jacob, if you can add her to the studio, that would be wonderful. Welcome, Sarah. It's so great to have you with us.
Hi, Maggie. Great to be here.
Let's just start right out. You have a PhD, you are a researcher, and you look at affordability and equity in higher education. So I wanted to start with a level set. Why the hell is university and college education so damnedly expensive these days? When I talk to folks that are a couple generations younger than me, including, older than myself, including my parents, folks of my parents' generation, my dad was able to self-finance and work a spare job and pay for all of his university education on his own. That is non-existent today. The bills are enormous. What's going on? Why is it so expensive?
That's a great question. And there are a couple factors to keep in mind. One is on the cost side. So costs have risen over time, including the input costs that go into college, such as faculty salaries, administration salaries, everything that goes into operating a college or university. Alongside that, we've also seen some disinvestment in higher education from the federal and state government in different ways. So there are ways that has kind of created a storm to have us rely more on student loan debt and put the burden more on individuals to finance their higher education than previous generations did.
Yeah, putting it out of reach for many. I know here in Wisconsin, we had been able to support our university system for so many decades, keeping it well in the, or at least within the affordability range for working people. Republicans in this state have been consistently chipping away at that funding level for decades now, placing many of our university system schools outside of affordability range for many of the working families here in Wisconsin. This is part of really a broader attack on education writ large, but especially the higher education system here in this country from Republicans. We're looking at a bill coming through the House, right, that's going to gut Medicaid and SNAP for tens of millions of Americans while providing the single largest tax cut in American history to the ultra wealthy and mega corporations. This bill would dramatically alter the education sector and cut more than $350 billion in federal investments that make higher education even arguably accessible, though it is still such a reach for so many, especially attacking the Pell Grant program, which if you've talked to first-gen college graduates, whether it is Congresswoman Gwen Moore here in the state of Wisconsin or others, that seems to be at risk. Where are we right now? Is that a done deal? Are there things that our listeners can do to stop the gutting of the Pell Grant program and other federal programs that help make university education maybe even an option for some?
That's right, Maggie. Thank you so much for outlining all of that. That's exactly right. Right now, there is a bill under consideration in the House, which can be passed on a party line vote through the budget reconciliation process. So through this process, the legislation is meant to be budgetary, focused on dollars and cents, and less focused on policy. And that allows it to bypass the filibuster in the Senate. So right now, it is possible that it could be going to the floor for a vote as soon as next week. And then the Senate will turn to it and determine what their version of the bill looks like. And right now it touches a lot. It cuts. It takes a sledgehammer to Medicaid, to nutrition assistance in the form of SNAP, and to all of these foundational investments in higher education that make it affordable for people from all backgrounds. And we know that in so many ways, higher education really does remain a pathway to the middle class, even given the student loan debt that many students have to take out, the earnings premium that most people receive from an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, really gives them access to a wide range of great careers. So we really want to make sure that that remains accessible to everyone who wants it. And this bill, this House Republican budget reconciliation bill, would do exactly the opposite. It would cut billions from several different programs that make it possible for people to attend college. And that includes the Pell Grant program. So the Pell Grant is the foundational investment in need-based federal financial aid. 92% of students who receive a Pell Grant come from families that earn under $60,000 per year. And the Pell Grant has really not kept pace with the rising cost of college over the decades. So it used to cover much more of of tuition than it does today. So this legislation would further hammer away at that, and it does it in a kind of back-end way of changing eligibility requirements. So it changes the definition of full-time from 12 credits per semester to 15 credits per semester, and it also prevents people who are enrolled less than half-time from receiving Pell Grants. So that would disproportionately impact community college students, and we know that people who are enrolled less than half time are more likely to work.
Right. I was just going to say, listen, if you're someone who's applying for a Pell Grant, the challenge is you are most likely having to work while you are pursuing your degree, which is why people would have 12 credits as opposed to 15.
Yes.
15 is considered to be a full-time student, slightly under that at 12. That's what I knew a lot of my friends when I was in college that had to work because their parents couldn't afford a $50,000 cash payment for tuition, books, and room and board. They were working because they had to, and it was incredibly difficult for them to maintain a 15 or 18 credit load. I know that. I worked in the cafeteria of the dorm I lived in, which, very humbling experience serving your own fellow dorm mates in the caf line. I want to reemphasize how impactful the Pell Grant program is. Do you have some of the statistics, Sarah, on how many people have been lifted into higher education by the Pell Grant, how long it's been around, how impactful it is? Again, this is a needs-based federal basically grant program that helps people access higher education. And here's my big philosophical question, and then you can go at it, Sarah, however you would like. I have lived in Denmark. I studied abroad when I was at university. Anyone who is able to get into a program attended that program. You didn't need to have come from a family with huge resources in order to access the higher education that you were qualified to pursue. It was, in a word, much more meritocratic. If you could address that and how many more anti-meritocratic obstacles would be in the way of people, that we would be losing so many incredible opportunities to develop the superpowers, the super brains of the next generation if this proposal goes through.
Absolutely. You're so right. And while in the most recent award year, almost 7 million undergraduate students received Pell Grants, about 6.8 million. And this legislation would affect 2 out of 3 of them. So it would affect the majority. So an estimated 4.4 million would either lose their Pell Grant funding entirely or see it reduced on average about 20%. So, and in Wisconsin, that would be about 17,000 people would lose all of their Pell Grant funding, and about 37,000 students would have their Pell Grant funding reduced. So they would be in this situation where they would have to say, okay, do I take on more courses? And then if they're working, then they have to take on fewer hours, so it costs them money. Or maybe they take on more courses, or maybe they take on more debt in order to fill that
gap. I was just going to say, put that tuition bill on the old credit card, which is a wonderful way to set yourself about 10 steps behind before you even get, before the starting bell goes off. The trickle down here, and I hate using that term because wealth doesn't trickle down, it always trickles up. But in this case, one of the trickle down or domino impacts here, if you think, ladies and gentlemen, if you've been worried about the University of Wisconsin's university system and the fact that we have had to close some of our smaller and satellite campuses because of lower enrollment, we're already facing what I'm going to call the higher education demographic crunch of a couple of generations. There's simply going to be fewer people in the age range of 18 to 28, 29, 30, depending on which analysis you're looking at, in the coming decade. What this will always also do is, if you have fewer Pell Grant recipients, you will have lower enrollments by definition, which will mean fewer tuition dollars coming into public university systems like the University of Wisconsin, which could pose existential threats to some of our smaller campuses. Or am I reading the dominoes wrong there, Sarah?
No, that's absolutely correct. And there are many ways that this legislation would squeeze states and would squeeze public higher education in particular. Medicaid cuts, SNAP cuts. Historically, when states our budgets are squeezed, some of those cuts have come from higher education. We saw that in the Great Recession, and that is a big reason why student debt skyrocketed around that time in the early 2010s. So it's absolute. There are so many ways that this bill would raise costs for students, would raise costs for states, and put them in a really challenging budgetary position. It's imperative that anyone who cares about public higher education, anyone who's a student, anyone who cares about broad-based access to higher education, call your representatives, tell them you do not support this reconciliation bill, tell them, you know, it would take literally food out of people's mouths and healthcare away and their access to education away.
If they want to tell you that they believe in meritocracy, why in the hell would they gut the Pell Grant program? Right. It is completely hypocritical. 16,000 Wisconsinites' opportunity to pursue the education that they are qualified to pursue is at risk, along with an additional 37,000 who may face reduced Pell Grant funding, a generation potentially left behind, not because they're unable, but because they simply can't afford it, call your reps and say, no way. We're going to take care of a few brief messages. We'll come right back on the other side with Jeremy Janine. We'll see what's going on in the Zeidler building here in the city of Milwaukee. Keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We have some big weather blowing, hailing, and tornadoing through Wisconsin. Nearly golf ball-sized hail coming down in Altoona. We now have a new tornado warning in Columbia County, also Green Lake and Marquette counties until 5:44 p.m. We're now seeing, looks like marble-sized hail on the east side of Wisconsin. Goodness my, everybody be safe out there. And with that, I would like to welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Jeremy Janine, creator of Urban Milwaukee, one of the contributing authors there. Jeremy, it has been an incredibly busy news day. Thank you so much for making time. Welcome back to the show. How are you, my friend?
Thanks for having me. No hail here in downtown Milwaukee yet.
Yet. Let's keep our fingers crossed on that since we're all out and about with all the news today. Let me start. Do you have any updates on the police presence at the City of Milwaukee Zeidler Municipal Building?
It's a strange situation. Here's what I know. Sometime around 3 o'clock, all of a sudden, a large wave of police officers descended on the Zeidler building, which is Maggie, you and possibly many of your listeners know, is connected to the city hall by a tunnel. Well, what had happened was a worker was terminated in what appears to be the waterworks, awaiting confirmation on that, but there was a loud noise in the stairwell next to the waterworks. The initial suspicion was it was gunshots. Now we're getting this kind of slow walk back that it might actually have just been something else that caused a loud noise. Still waiting on confirmation on that. Still a lot of police officers around City Hall, although people are now being let out of the complex and some of the vehicles are disappearing from the police.
Wow, we'll keep our eye on that. Certainly a scary situation. I worked in the Zeidler building for many years when I was working in the city attorney's office there. So, I hope everyone's safe and well there. And please do keep us posted, Jeremy, if you hear of anything else. I wanted to turn next. Were you actually in the courtroom for Judge Dugan's arraignment this morning?
Graham Kilmer was there for Milwaukee, and he was in almost everyone ended up in this media overflow room, and it was a quick event.
Yeah, 4 or 5 minutes as these arraignments typically go. As I understand it, Judge Dugan did not speak at all in the hearing. Is that correct?
That is correct. Her attorney, Stephen Viscupic, entered her plea on her behalf.
Plea of not guilty. What did Graham Kilmer of Urban Milwaukee, that you also work for and helped found, Jeremy, what did Graham say generally about the mood in the courtroom, anything about Judge Dugan's demeanor?
Just that it was in and out quick and that she seemed to exude confidence, her entire legal team did, and that there was a calm demeanor in the courtroom. It was not charged between the two parties.
That's good to hear. Do you know who appeared on behalf of the U.S. Attorney's Office?
I don't off the top of my head. I would have to look at my notes, but it was someone who actually, when Stephen Viscupic was U.S. Attorney, was his deputy. So someone he has a close relationship with.
Yeah, it's interesting because right now, Rick Froehling, who for years, including when Biskupic was the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, Rick Froehling was the head of the criminal division, which is one of the top deputy type positions within the U.S. attorney's office. I'm curious if it was Rick, in fact, that appeared. He is currently the acting U.S. attorney pending an appointment of a U.S. attorney Trump administration to the Eastern District of Wisconsin, has been both a fine prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office, has worked there for decades, all sorts of Republican and Democratic administrations. So it's fascinating to me to see these dynamics. Of course, folks, if you've been listening to our coverage and my coverage, former Eastern District of Wisconsin U.S. Attorney Stephen Biskupic is part of Judge Dugan's crackerjack legal team, along with former Solicitor General Paul Clement, a Nate Johnson. It is this very like Venn diagram overlapping, just fascinating. Jeremy, again, was the pro scene outside? I know that there was a gathering organized for about 7:45 this morning. Was there anything notable or remarkable about the protest prior to her primary appearance this morning at the federal courthouse?
It even lasted through the appearance. There was one point that you could hear it in the courtroom, and Dugan made a comment that you could not hear to one of her attorneys. Get back to previously, it was Frohlich that represented the U.S. in the case. There was Hannah Dugan, a number of other hands. The protest did not focus solely on Hannah Dugan, but against all of the Trump administration's policies.
Thanks so much. That's Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee. I know you have to get to yet another media news event this afternoon, and our connection's a little spotty, Jeremy. So I'm going to say thank you much. We will return next week with Jeremy Janine of Urban Milwaukee and columnist there for more Milwaukee as Microcosm. Jeremy and Kate does roll in for us folks here in southeastern Wisconsin. Thanks again, Jeremy. Really appreciate that. Folks, we are going to continue to bring you breaking coverage of the new of the weather events across the state of Wisconsin. Right after the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Corey Hartman of Severe Weather Studios. He's going to give us a weather update at the top of the hour. One thing I wanted to make note of just briefly as we close out the 4 p.m. hour is this. When we turn to what's legal, everybody, you're going to want to tune in every day to the Mag, because over the coming weeks, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is going to be issuing jury decisions, including on Wisconsin's 1849 putative abortion ban, which isn't really an abortion ban. But you're going to want to keep it locked here, because I will be breaking down all those blockbuster decisions in the coming weeks before the end of the Wisconsin Supreme Court's term. When we come back after the top of the hour, we'll get a weather update and to the monumental arguments that occurred earlier today before the U.S. Supreme Court about birthright citizenship and the district court. I'm Maggie, listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.